The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Keep your mission on your mind, and your mind on your mission. This is Mission Minded with Michael Coleman.
Michael Coleman is the CEO of the Montgomery Area Food Bank, MAFB.org, and is a good friend of mine. And we started a show a couple of years ago called Mission Minded. Keep your mind, your mission, your mind. It started out, Michael, as a kind of a non-for-profit show. Certainly we talk about the tree system, you know, where you draw a picture of a tree and you start putting branches out and you start writing down ideas on those branches. And I'd say we're probably out to about the third or fourth branch right now. But this has turned out to be one beautiful looking tree. Brother, I got news for you. It turned out to be a great show. We're well over a year into it. And thanks again for joining me here this week on Mission Minded. You can hear the show at least 5 days a week on TKR. And by the way, some big changes coming up on Tony Curry Radio. So you'll be able to hear and access Mission Minded much easier. Also through our podcast network, Tony Curry Radio Podcast. Got a lot to get into today. First of all, you doing well? Everything good with you?
Yeah, I want to tell everybody we're recording today. It's the day before the 4th of July.
Yes.
And so I'm somebody very thankful for our country. Our country is certainly not perfect and has a lot of challenges, but I'm thankful to be raised in a country like ours with the opportunity that it has. And, served in the Army for 21 years, saw the good, see the bad, you know. But overall, incredibly grateful to have been raised in this environment.
Absolutely. First email here, and it comes from Mary, Ted, and Bobby, three different ones. And I'm going to back it up a little bit before we specifically get into this email question. But the Supreme Court, which is primarily conservative right now, has really moved a lot. It seems like, I mean, if you and I had something that needed to go to the Supreme Court, it seems like it would take years to get there. And it's almost every single week the Supreme Court is doing something or making some huge decision that directly or indirectly, it affects all of us in some form or fashion. And the crazy thing is mostly, and Roe versus Wade certainly was huge. Now affirmative action, the reversal on that is huge as well. Does it make you feel a little uncomfortable just as an American to know that the Supreme Court is reversing some things that have been held precedent for so long?
Well, I don't know that it makes me feel uncomfortable. Set the issues aside. I mean, it's a third arm of our government, and it serves its purpose, and it's to provide a check and balance on the law so that, you know, the Congress passes these laws, and I'm sure they're well-meaning and serve a purpose. But the Supreme Court is supposed to lay them up against our founding Constitution and decide as to whether that's in accordance with the ideas of our founding fathers. And of course, it sways, because if the court turns more progressive, you know, 12 years down, 15 years, 30 years, whatever it is, then we see it will sway back, and a lot of those conservative decisions will be overcome. And so I think we just look back at our history. You look at the Brown versus Board of Education, all those kind of things where, I mean, basically they were saying that at one time, you know, it's okay to have slaves. It's okay to own people. And we've come so far from that. So sometimes change can be good. It all depends on your perspective. If you're leaning more conservatively, I'm sure you applaud the recent movement. If you're more progressive, you feel frustrated. But I've seen it flipped around the other side, is where the progressives had the advantage. And I saw with each change, progressives were cheering. And with each rejection, the conservatives were weeping and gnashing teeth. So it just seems to be part and parcel to the whole formula, and that's probably a good thing.
As a non-confrontational kind of guy, when something's been one way for a long period of time, and you know, I love to analogize with relationships. This reminds me a little bit of a man and a woman who've been married for a long period of time. We spoke about this on the show, and all of a sudden, Maybe he's been the stay-home dad, or maybe she's been the stay-home mom, and then maybe after 15 or 20 years, she decides or he decides they want to get back in the workforce, and it shakes the cage of that relationship. And I think that's what we're seeing in this country right now, is it's been this way for a long period of time, and a lot of people said, okay, this is the way it is, this is what the court ruled, and that's the way it's going to be, whether I like it or not. And now all of a sudden, it's totally different. And we know from human nature, we don't like change one way or another. Yeah. If it directly affects you, you really don't like change.
And there's, and lots of times it's impossible to know all the ramifications of a decision. If you're passionate about this decision, you may see how it affects you on a deeper level. You may have done the research. You may understand once the decision trickles down a year from now, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, how it's going to affect people. What I have found is when decisions like this come down, in this case, it favors conservative opinion. If you're a progressive, then you're gonna warn people, but it's gonna be worst case scenario, and you're gonna shout that from the rooftops. Is worst case scenario possible? Yeah, it's possible. But we tend to, when something goes against us, we tend to talk very apocalyptic. Like, this is the end of the world. All these people are going to be affected. It's never going to be the same again.
You're right.
And lots of times, once that noise calms down, we just adapt and we just move on. Both sides are guilty of it. So right now, there's a lot of noise about all the people that will be affected. And I'm not saying there won't be people who are affected, but the whole question is, when you go back and look at both sides of this issue, and it's like this with a lot of issues. You can see the arguments on each side. The question comes down to, is it in accordance with the ideals laid out by our founding fathers, which we as a country committed to, whether you like it or not? And I'm going to tell you something, that's an incredibly difficult thing, because look at where we are in terms of our progress and everything else over 200 years. The question is, if the founding fathers knew what they knew today, would those principles still be the same?
Yeah.
And maybe they would. Maybe the principles wouldn't change at all. Maybe they may be more conservative. You just don't know, given this day and time. But it's a founding document. It's all we have. We ideally put brilliant people in the court to be able to interpret that. And it's the thing that keeps us all together. And one of the beauties, when I look at Russia right now and all the conflict over there, I see people, if you speak out against Putin, if you do all these kind of things, you know, you're gonna spend time in jail. Your family could be, physically hurt. There's all sorts of ramifications of that. And in our country, we get to bellyache and complain and try to fight for a better ideal. And that's actually one of the blessings we're going to celebrate tomorrow, is we have the freedom to do that.
There you go. Mary, Ted, and Bobby, they all wrote the same thing. They want to know, what's Michael Coleman's idea? And by info@TonyCurryRadio.net is the way to email us, info@TonyCurryRadio.net. What's Michael's thoughts on affirmative action and, of course, the reversal of that through the Supreme Court? What are your thoughts on affirmative action and what it is now?
Yeah, so anytime I'm looking at something, and I used to didn't be this way, but as I've gotten older, I've always tried to add and become more wise. And so I really try to listen and understand the perspective of the ones who are putting forth or propagating an idea. And having worked in poverty and with poverty population, not always people of color, it could be white, it could be black, Hispanic, whatever, there are some real challenges. I'm going to give you an example of, once I became a little more sensitive to this issue, of things that I had heard in my past. So I came from a very small town in Alabama, and not a lot of industry, not a lot of jobs sometimes. And so a lot of people worked for the state or had a government job of some type. And if you had a very good job, as long as you showed up to work and did that, you know, you move your way up. But then once you were very high up, then it was amazing the amount of influence and power that you had. You could give, you know, just kind of what they talk about, the good old boy network. You could pass jobs out to your friends, those that were close to you. So imagine if you were an African-American in that environment, and the best paying jobs are controlled by a guy that you don't know. You don't even have access into that system. And so there is no opportunity for you or your circle of friends or influence to access something that's coming from the government that's not supposed to be controlled by one segment of the population. So one of the things that you see is people talk about quotas, like affirmative actions. You know, people who are against it or say it's all about quotas. And you see that in government contract, and they may say, okay, you have to have, this could be state law, could be federal law. If you're going to do government contracting, you have to open it up to a certain amount of minorities. Mm-hmm. And with every contract you do, you have to ensure. And people say, well, that's stupid. That's not fair. Well, it's because if you've always been inside the circle and you've always had access, it doesn't seem smart to do that. But if you're the outside of the circle looking in, and here comes a multi-million-dollar contract for a construction company, but you're on the outside. You could do this job. You could do it well, but you don't have the connections. You don't have the influence. You don't have the pull. In other words, they're not even going to look. Any bid you put in is going to go straight in the trash. They're never going to give this to an African American company, and that was the norm at one time. And so I think when I see things like that, you could characterize that as quota. But I think most people, if you took the emotion out of it, would say, we want equal access for everybody. Everybody, if it's a government contract, we truly want the best person at the best price to be able to have access. I don't think anybody looks back on our system in the 60s and 70s. Of how things were run and say that was fair, because we know minorities were not even given an opportunity. Most conservatives that I know say, look, I'm all about leveling the playing field. What conservatives don't want to do is guarantee the outcome. But if you just look at the scenario I laid out, what you see is there was not a level playing field. Everybody didn't have access. And so if it were not for the government stepping in, even though as much as conservatives hate the government stepping in, if it weren't for the government stepping in and prying open access, then the outcome was guaranteed. Mm-hmm. Maybe not to the individual, but certainly to the people in the know who had access. Yeah. So when I look at the issue that way, from the perspective of those who are pro affirmative action, then I start to see, okay, well, does the same thing apply to college entrance? So if I may be intelligent, or have enough intelligence, but there may be other factors based on my environment that I didn't have access to. So maybe I don't have all the things on my resume because I'm out in rural Alabama trying to get into Harvard. And I'm competing against somebody who comes from a wealthy family, who could have all these access to all these opportunities, internships, and all that. And so that playing field is not level. So if you're looking at just what the resume says, people of wealth, and that's even against poor white people as well. You know, they're not going to get those. Other people are not going to get an opportunity.
And I'll say this, and we've said this a million times, and you and I were talking about white privilege before we started the show, and we may or may not get into that depending on our time. But until you've been in those person's shoes or someone that needs to have an affirmative action active, we're never going to understand the other side. I can't speak for black people. I can't speak for women. I can't speak for people that I'm not. I can try to be understanding, and I can try to understand their point of view. And it's not to say that I don't agree with them. It's just that I'm not in that position. So I can't, You know, I can't directly say yes. I think this is the right thing or the wrong thing. It's just an opinion at that point, and I don't know how you feel about that. And again, coming in this country as a white male, we are the majority, and we've had it pretty good in this country. Because of that, we don't quite understand a lot of these things. info@tonycurryradio.net, mission-minded. He is, of course, the CEO of the Montgomery Area Food Bank. They cover 35 counties in the great state of Alabama through Feeding America, do wonderful work. I'm going to go ahead and continue to kind of piggyback this Supreme Court ruling, sure. Because just a couple days ago, they also ruled on the student loan forgiveness, which, of course, was a huge blow against Joe Biden, something he's been pushing now for a couple of years. What are your thoughts on that as far as not having? I know it was going to, I think, 20 million Americans were going to have all of their student loans forgiven, and then another 20 million were going to have some of those loans cut at least in half, and now it looks like that's not going to happen. Joe has promised that he's going to continue to work towards that and try to find a loophole to make that happen. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so, and I do want to go back because I do have something I want to add in a minute on sure. On the affirmative action.
Yeah.
But on the student loans, so I'm somebody who went to the military without a pot to pee in at 18, did not care anything about education at the time, and ultimately went on and got my master's and even did some PhD work that I didn't finish. So I had, you know, I ended up borrowing probably 80 grand. So all my education was paid for. I had got some benefits from the military, but a lot of student loans. I was paying $600 a month, and I know for many, many years was paying over $600 a month, and that was a heavy burden. Now, I ended up paying it all off. So I'm a little bit biased in that when I look at people who say, well, I want the advantage of an education. When people make a decision, I want to have an education. And because I want to achieve X, Y, and Z, it's going to make me more money. It's going to, but I can't afford to go there. So this is the way that I choose to have to take. And the consequences of that is when you take on that debt, you get the benefit in theory. And then you meet your obligation, you meet your responsibility. Now, the flip side of that is this, that, there's so much financial ignorance out there, and you're making money available to people who may not even know what degree they want in swap majors and end up going to, for 6 or 7 years, and they're not having to pay that back while they're in school. And so they don't have a realistic realistic understanding of what's going to have to be paid back and what that means and what that looks like. And so I tend to blame the universities. The universities know that you have a lot of government money that goes into Pell Grants, but you also know you have easy access to money through through student loans. Almost anybody can get one. And I think they've taken advantage by continuing to raise tuition every year and pricing that out. And then the degrees, and then allowing people to go into degree fields that there's no way that they're going to be able to make enough money. I mean, it's different if you say, okay, it takes me $200,000 to get through medical school. Let's say that's, I'm just making that up. Let's say that's the case. But you know, as a doctor, you can make a pretty lucrative living. So $200,000, while it's a lot of money, you're like, hey, it's worth it if that's what's keeping me from being able to get my medical degree. But if you're going into the social field, which is some of the lowest paying jobs out there, and you're allowed to borrow to get a master's in social work, and you're allowed to borrow $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, and you know you're going to struggle to make $40,000 to $50,000 a year, there ought to be something in place that prevents people, or really they have to go through some type of education course so that they can think down the road and understand they're getting a short-term gain, but they're going to incur some long-term pain. And I just don't think we as a society are preparing our people and our education system makes it way too easy to take advantage of people in their ignorance.
Can you tell me, and you're listening to Mission Minded here with Michael Coleman, the Montgomery Area Food Bank. I'm Tony Curry. You can hear the show at least 5 days a week here on TKR. Can you tell me why the government or some other, the DOJ, whoever, I don't even know who this would be up to, has not started investigating universities as we know it? And do you think that universities in this country are price gouging? Do you think they have to be charging? And my son, I'm seeing it firsthand. My son's going to Clemson, and you would think that because he's coming from out of state, it would be cheaper. I know it's not. You would think it'd be cheaper because he's going to be spending money inside that state that normally he would not be, but it's actually twice as much because he's not inside that state. But why aren't we? It seems like we could nip it in the bud. Why wouldn't we go after the universities to see if they could drop back a little bit? They're never going to drop their tuition price. Why wouldn't they drop that a little bit, and then we wouldn't have nearly as many people have to take loans down in order to go to school? It seems like it would fix it. Am I missing something?
Well, and this is not really a field of expertise of mine, but look, I've heard enough. My daughter teaches at a college. Now, it's a private college. She's a professor, and of course, she doesn't make that much money, but you have, you know, I think the whole education system is just, it doesn't have the accountability that it should in terms of the government and the money the government puts in there. So the government has propped it up to try to help, at least in theory, to help citizens be able to overcome poverty and have opportunity. And so from that perspective, you're like, well, that's great. You can go to school, you get a Pell Grant. If you can't afford it, it can cover a lot of the costs. Hey, rest of the stuff, you can get a student loan and you can make it through, and hey, you're all right. But so they're kind of in it together. And I'm not saying it's necessarily for nefarious reasons, but there's no check and balance system that says, hey, we're only going to do X amount, you know, or there's really nobody in there fighting for educational tuition decreases and any kind of balance or any kind of oversight into that, and or certainly not a national movement for it. So it just it gets boiled down. The argument gets overly simplified, which just says, well, hey, I borrowed all this money. Why do I have to pay it back? It's too much. And we're like, yeah, that's what life is. Mm-hmm. The same thing is going to happen to you when you go out and buy a house you can't afford. The same thing is going to happen when you buy a car you can't afford. You don't get to just walk away and let other people eat the responsibility of that. And so the pushback on that is there's no sense of fairness in that. That these people, they made the decision. Maybe it was made in ignorance. No doubt it was. I don't think people are intentionally gaming the system, but then they're getting out there and they realize, especially you have, you know, some challenges with millennials and Gen Zs and all the other kind of stuff. And they're getting out there saying, well, this whole work and this whole adulting thing is pretty tough. It's tougher than we thought. And us Gen Xers, and I'm right there on the cusp of being a boomer. And I think you are, you and I are the same age, I think. And it's like, look, but that's all we've known. And so it's hard for us to, for me to even wrap my mind around the idea that I could just walk away from this huge debt and say, it's not fair that I have to pay it back, because it empowered me to be able to go to heights that otherwise I wouldn't have. So I just can't wrap around my mind. Why wouldn't I feel like I needed to pay this back? I signed on the dotted line. I gave them my name. And I said, hey, if you give me this money, I'm going to pay it back no matter how long it takes. And I feel a sense of duty and honor to do that.
The other thing I think that kind of bothers me, too, is how many people or how many kids didn't get a chance to go to college because they couldn't afford. Maybe they did it right and said, listen, we can get you a loan, but I don't know if I'll ever be able to pay it back. And because of that, they decided to get a skill job. Maybe that was a blessing in disguise. But now, all of a sudden, people that did take that leap of faith, now they could have their entire loan forgiven. Whereas a lot of people decide they just couldn't, they wanted to do it right. They tried to do it and they're like, I can't pay this loan back. And so they didn't go. And now perhaps they could have gone to college for free. I don't know. It's a tough call. We had a show about this about a month and a half ago about whether we should go to college or not. Sit out for a couple of years, and now these skill positions are paying so much right out of the box, you can start working right out of high school, making $75,000, $80,000, whether it's for Amazon or a welder or whatever. There's all kinds of skill positions. There's a reason, and I've got one on my radio show, Southern Precision Staffing. There's so many great staffing companies now that can find you work. It's kind of crazy. He's Michael Coleman. I'm Tony Curry. Kind of go along with that same lines, a Sam in Huntsville, info@tonycurryradio.net. Says he's got one that just graduated here in 2023 from the University of Alabama, and he's doing well. He's deciding to go get his undergrad, but his other son is fixing to graduate from high school after next year and has told his son, unlike his first son, who was only 4 years removed, he doesn't have to go to college. And he said one of the reasons is because dad can't afford to send another one to college. And he's trying to decide whether he should just let his son go ahead and work in a skill position or whether he should go ahead and work in a skill position for a couple of years, save enough money, and then go to college. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, so I totally get that position. So lots of different ways you can do it. Most 18-year-olds are not locked in on what they for sure want to do. And if I had somebody, I mean, if my child came to me and said, I want to be a nuclear engineer, and I don't know, is there such a thing as a nuclear engineer? Okay, so nuclear engineer, it didn't sound right to me for some reason when I said it out loud. So I said, I want to be a nuclear engineer, and I've done the math for it. I've been working all the way through high school, my focus. And I work so hard because this is what I want to be. And you're like, okay, they're locked in. They know what they want to be. And they want to go to school. If I didn't have the money for it, that's where you would say, okay, what can I do to facilitate this? And it may be, even then, it might be a good idea to let them go to a local community college to knock out some of the common courses or whatever. And then when they want to transition to the specialty, to be able to do that. But all too often people get up there and they don't have the maturity. They don't have the readiness. They don't really are not prepared to make that kind of decision. So they get over there and they don't take it seriously, or they muddle through or whatever. And so the question each person has to have is, I mean, for me is look at each person, look at each child, understand where they are, and understand that there's not a one-size-fits-all approach, because the oldest child may have gone through and done very well. The youngest child may not be as motivated, or the younger child may be much more adept at working with their hands, or that may be where their interest is. But I personally have struggled with just sending your child off to school if the child for a year or two to kind of figure it out. Now, many parents do it. Many parents can afford it. So I'm not saying that in a condemning way. I'm just saying with somebody who doesn't have those kind of, doesn't have the freedom and don't want to have the financial flexibility to do something like that, there's a lot better options out there to letting them navigate and maybe work for a while. See what just the work life is like, go to school, and there's just lots of ways to do that shouldn't feel the pressure of having to have him follow in his big brother's footsteps necessarily.
You and I have been talking about this now for over a year, the ramifications, the issues, the fallout from COVID and how it's affected all of us. We are not going to see the end of this for a long period of time, whether it's depression, whether it's concentrating on self-medicating, whether it's our people skills, the way we touch people, the people we have to converse with, whether we want to work remotely, whether we want to work inside of an office. But we've got all these 2020 kids that were freshmen in college now graduating in 2023, and they're getting into the workforce and they don't know what to do. Great article through the Wall Street Journal. We're going to jump into that next week and some of the big things. And I want to give you a week to kind of think about what you think some of those biggest things are, because a lot of kids seem to be very stiff. Some can't think fast enough. Some are talking too fast. Some have to rely on filler words before they actually answer their questions. And then again, if you have the whole thing of do I want to work in an office, or do I want to work from home, or do a little bit of both? So we'll get into that next week. If you got email questions concerning that, send them on to us. info@tonycurryradio.net, info@tonycurryradio.net. Michael, you do wonderful work. Tell people how they can find you and how they can help the Montgomery Area Food Bank. It is hot. It's summertime. People need to eat.
That's right. MAFB.org. My email's there. You can reach me through LinkedIn. Again, anybody wants to reach out and ask me any personal questions, I'd love for you to send them to the show. Let's take some time, because if you have questions, it's very likely that other people have questions. Again, thanks everybody for listening. I hope you have a great 4th. Of course, by the time you hear this, I think that'll be gone. But thank you all for being part of our audience and helping us grow, and just very excited to be a part of this. Thank you.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.